We will not be closing our roads. From Donegal. You will not be dividing the families of Strabane and Lifford from each other. When you say you don't want a hard border in Ireland, we don't believe you. Why don't we believe you? Because you have lied your way through every land. And every people you have occupied and oppressed. And you can lie all you want, for we know the truth. And the truth is, your days in Ireland are numbered. As the prisoners, as the blanket men, as the protesting women, as the hunger strikers proclaimed, in the face of all that pointless British brutality, above which we rose with such dignity, Chucky Arlad!
Let's get reaction to that from the Ulster Unionist Party MLA, Doug Beattie. Morning, Doug.
Morning, Stephen. Well, look, you know, it's quite clear that Martina was playing to the crowd. You know, you can hear she's playing to the crowd. I think the point is that she knew, as everybody would know, that this would go far and wide, that this wasn't just directed at the crowd. This was directed at everybody. And it's rhetorical language, which is unhelpful. It's rhetorical language that drives us back to a time that we once went through that we do not want to go back through again. And when they're using lines like, they will not close our roads, they will not close our bridges. Nobody wants to close a road. Nobody wants to close a bridge. I certainly don't. But what are they saying they will do if that does happen? Are they really implying something here? And that concerns me greatly.
Well, you say it concerns you, and clearly what you are referencing here is any return to violence of any description or support for violence. And yeah, Sinn Féin have made it very clear that they are wedded to peace.
Well, listen, you know when she screams and shouts and saying she doesn't trust the British government? I don't trust her. I don't trust Sinn Féin. I don't trust the violent Republican movement, which has not gone away. So trust has to be seen in both ways. So they can say all they want. I've seen barefaced lies from them for years and years and years, and that has not changed. And then she goes on to talking about how we treat prisoners. We know how they treat prisoners. She supported, she condoned, she excused how they treated prisoners when they took them to the borders and executed them and disappeared them and in some cases booby-trapped their bodies so they didn't even have dignity in death. I do not trust them absolutely one bit. And her language is fitting into other language that's being used at this moment in time. I've seen something from a dean from Dublin City University which started to promote the idea that we're going to go back to the permanent vehicle checkpoints, heavily militarised border that we once had. We're not going back there. Closed border will not work, never did work, won't work now, and I know this for a fact because I was there. So we're not going back to that. So this language is deliberately provocative. And to finish it off by screaming Chucky Allah three times, which I get why she may well do that, but she has to understand for people like me and the vast majority of the people of Northern Ireland, that was the cry of the IRA as they took the lives of their loved ones. And therefore, she knew she was doing that. And therefore, by doing that, what she has done is spit in the face of victims.
And yet, if Northern Ireland is to have devolution again, there's going to have to be, and there will be, Sinn Féin in the government of this place.
Well, they're going to have to change. They're going to have
and they're
to
entitled to it because of their mandate.
Well, they are, and I'm a Democrat, Stephen, and I've always been a Democrat, and they're going to have to do a step change because if this is the language that they are going to use, is if this is what they are going to promote when they speak, then who's going to join them in government again if we don't trust them? And I don't trust them. You know, and there's the problem. I think if we can all dial down our language, if we can all dial down the rhetoric just a little bit.
Well, you're not dialing down yours, to be fair. You're talking about how Martina Anderson would have supported people being executed and surrounded and their bodies blown up with bombs and things. So you're not dialing down yours.
You've asked me to come on your show, Stephen. You've asked me to react to what Martina Anderson said. And I'm being straight talking in regards to that. I wouldn't have to say this if she didn't come off with that in the first place. I'd be on here talking about how we have to change, how we have to move, and how we have to deal with Brexit together. That's what I would be talking about.
When Sinn Féin say, Doug, you say you don't trust Sinn Féin. When Sinn Féin say that in the event of a united Ireland, that unionists would be their neighbours here in Northern Ireland, able to live their lives and have their identity freely as they wish to do so. Do you believe them with that?
I don't believe Sinn Féin. No, not one bit of Sinn Féin.
So what do you think would be? What do you think? How do you think unionist life would be in a united Ireland?
I think with Sinn Féin anywhere near government, or with Sinn Féin anywhere near power, with Sinn Féin having any mandate whatsoever, then the lives of many people here will be absolutely intolerable. I think that people who served in the armed forces here, who still live here, who call this home, we'll find it extremely difficult. I already live a life, Stephen, where I have to check under my car four times a day. I do that now, and we don't have a united Ireland with Sinn Féin anywhere near the helm. So how do you think that's going to change when they are? I mean, this is the whole point that I make. People scream at unionists and say we must be inclusive, and I get that. Sometimes we haven't been, and we try.
Well, what did you mean about Sinn Féin when you said that?
Which piece, mate?
When you said, how do you think you would feel? What do you mean? What would be the implication of that?
Of Sinn Féin being near the helm?
Yes.
Well, I think they will mobilise their core support, either directly or indirectly, and that would make life totally intolerable for people like myself and other like-minded people like me who are staunch, utter staunch unionists.
But how could you ever go into government with Sinn Féin in the future again if what you're saying this morning is the thoughts of your party? Well, you don't trust them, you fear them. These are people who you need to be in government with.
Let me give you two answers to that, Stephen, if I can, first of all. We left government with Sinn Féin in 2015, and we left government for two reasons. That was because murder on our streets and poor governance, and that's why we left in 2015, and we haven't been back since, and nothing has changed to put us back again. But we are open to people changing their mindset. We're open for Sinn Féin to change the way they do business. Because we are Democrats and we understand that they have a vote and we sometimes have to work with people. We work with them on councils, we work with them in committees, we work with them in all party groups. We work with them on a day-to-day basis. We have to do that to make this country work. I'm a professional politician at this moment in time and it's my job to do that. But I cannot go into, and we will not go into a government unless we change the way we are doing business, unless they and others change the way they're doing business. And I'm not directing this all at Sinn Féin. There are other people at fault, and even we as a party at times are at fault. But we're discussing what was said at that commemoration. And I don't ever attack that commemoration. I'm not attacking that commemoration. But I'm attacking the words that she used because they're rhetorical words. They're language that throws us down back to a time past, and we do not need that. And she needs to dial it down a bit.
Malachy?
Well, I mean, there have been other faces of Sinn Féin. I mean, Martina Anderson, we will recall, was sent off to Europe, where perhaps people who were called, and I'm only speculating, but perhaps colleagues of hers realised that she would be a very strident voice and maybe wasn't what was needed in the kind of executive that Martin McGuinness was trying to create. Let us think back even to the jokes that were made about the warmth of the relationship between Martin McGuinness and Arlene Foster. I mean, the term was coined Marlene, you know, as if they were just too close and too cozy together. That was weeks before the whole thing fell apart. So there has been a real effort by unionists and the DUP to have good relations with Sinn Féin, and that has been reciprocated at times by Sinn Féin. But we've moved away from that, and I suppose all we can retain from it is the potential that might happen again.
Well, and
it will not happen with the likes of Martina, you know. But I also think it's very unlikely we're going to see the Assembly back anyway. I really do. I don't see how the Assembly can be put together in the face of a bad Brexit or a no-deal Brexit. I just don't see that happening. I think at the moment as well with the decision that the Westminster will legislate for same-sex marriage and abortion law reform, then an awful lot of people don't want the Assembly back until that's done, because they see, you know, see the potential of losing those gains, and therefore they're going to keep the Assembly at a distance. I'd be interested in hearing what Doug thinks, if you do think there's actually any remote possibility of the Assembly coming back, because, you know, I don't see it. I think.
Do you, Doug?
Well, I'm a pessimistic optimist, Stephen. So we are working towards getting it back up and running. So
sign of it?
Well, listen, you know, if you'd asked me that a week ago, I'd say, look, we're on the cusp of having a deal here between the DUP and Sinn Féin. If you're asking me today, I'm saying to you, look, we're as far away as we ever were. So I think
what's changed?
I think there's a real ebb and flow here. But
what has changed?
Between
last week and this week?
I think language has changed. I think that the language between the parties just seems to have changed. There's a real ebb and flow, Stephen, is the point that I'm making. Is sometimes you think you're right on the cusp of something, and then all of a sudden language changes and you feel like you're being driven further away. And that's me just...
And Doug, that would include the language of Arlene Foster, wouldn't it? I mean, when Arlene Foster accuses the Irish government of belligerence, when the whole context of Brexit is framed as a British-Irish dispute, which it is now, that's how it's being talked about by the DUP, and by Tory ministers, and by of the British media.
Ben Laurie?
That's asking for...
Well, there is an analogy between the DUP and Sinn Féin in the following respect. In the difficulty that they seem to be having, both parties don't openly reveal what's going on within the party, but the difficulty that they seem to be having with their traditionalist wings. If I was to say something generous about Sinn Féin, clearly the rhetoric the like of which has never been seen before, aside from the fact that Martin McGuinness did have these good personal relationships with people in the DUP, and that was a very big steadying factor in the whole of Northern Ireland. We didn't even realise it at the time, but it was. After that, the most significant thing is Mary Lou McDonald. She said extraordinary stuff. She said that was Rome rule, that there were two ultra-conservative jurisdictions, which, and there's a lot to be said for this analysis in the aftermath of partition. She said all of these things. She said Derry, Londonderry. She did this groundbreaking stuff, but she wasn't a volunteer. So it's a bit like in the DUP analogy, somebody who's an ex-Ulster unionist who's not particularly religious coming in and then doing language that is different from the Free Presbyterians, and suddenly when they have a gay candidate, as they had in the council elections, the traditionalists make their presence felt. And I think the big question in this is this a reflection of Mary Lou McDonald's strategy being powerless? Is she being marginalised? Or is this just letting the hardliners show their face from time to time?
Gerry and Derry. Morning, Gerry.
Morning, Stephen.
In London, Derry. Morning, Gerry.
I have to say, Martina saying Chokey or La, I welcome, but I wish she had been able to say Hannock or La instead of Our Day Will Come, Our Day Has Come, and the United Ireland is down the road. And this idea, and Doug Beattie, no, that we have to tune down our aspirations and become second-class citizens again. Well, we're just approaching this week the 50th anniversary of the Battle of Arkside, where the people here in Derry stood up and said, second-class citizenship is gone, gone and gone. It has gone forever. So I just wish Martina yesterday was able to say five or six times, Hannock Ar La, Our Day Has Come. And it is coming, because Brexit will be a massive disaster for every citizen living on the island of Ireland.
Do you want to respond to that, Doug?
Well, the bottom line is, and I'll say this openly, I don't say that anybody shouldn't have an aspiration for a United Ireland. Quite right, they should, and I support them to have that political aspiration for a United Ireland, and I've openly said that previously. But when it involves burning people to death, then I take an exception to that. And if somebody,
we're not burning people to death. They never burned anyone to death.
They supported openly the people who did.
Sinn Féin do not currently
support any form of violence, Doug.
Sorry, Stephen, I didn't say current. I said previous. And if you're telling me that they did not and do not still condone what happened during the Troubles, then I would say you're naive, Stephen, because they do, and we all know they do. And that's the point that I'm making.
You're 100% wrong. Sinn Féin never supported.
And the point that I'm making is this.
Sinn Féin never supported.
There are hundreds of thousands of people
to death.
Decent people who want a united Ireland, and they do so through political peaceful means. That's the way it should be.
Do you think, Doug, can I ask you a straight question? And obviously I'm not asking if you want this. But do you feel, Doug, as a prominent member of the Ulster Unionist Party, and I know you will fight this, it's your political objective to fight it, but do you think we are closer to a united Ireland than we were?
Stephen, I have to answer that again in two ways, because if I don't, people will take it a certain way. First of all, I don't think we are going to ever have a united Ireland in my lifetime. And of course, people say, well, you would say that, but I genuinely believe that. The second point is, are we closer? We are closer, and here's the reason why we are. And that's because some of the policies of the DUP have driven us to this road. They have driven us to this position where people are turning their back on the union because they are not getting equality where they deserve to have equality. And the sooner we as unionists understand that the union is safer, the union is stronger, if we are accepting of everybody, regardless of colour, regardless of religion, regardless of sexual orientation, and we bring them all in, and then we suddenly realise that this is a place people want to live. The union is a place that people want to be part of. And it's a union of four nations. And we need to be doing that. We need to be doing it now. And we need to be promoting British values.
Do you think we are closer to United Ireland, Ben?
I think there's a real issue with Brexit. I think that when you grind into some of the in-depth face-to-face surveys, there hasn't, I'm relieved to say, because I was worried about this, seems to have been that big movement. But there's certainly the danger that Brexit would be a catalyst for movement in Scotland and movement in Northern Ireland. And remember how generous the British government has been in this. The British government says in Scotland and Northern Ireland, 50% plus one, and you can go. Spain doesn't say this about Catalonia. It says it's a decision for the country as a whole. America certainly doesn't allow any of its states to go. There isn't even a mechanism in the US Constitution to get out. They can't. End of story. So there would be a legitimate British position, which has basically never been made, that it isn't up to Northern Ireland and Scotland to go. It is said that they can, and I think that this is a problem for unionists. If the centre ground starts to turn against, and it's really angry about Brexit. And remember that the Alliance Party and the SDLP and the Greens and Sinn Féin had these joint missions to Michael Barnier and people like that. And I think part of the issues that we're seeing is the outworking of that. I think that's some of the most significant things that's happened in the last 3 years. I think that gave the EU steel. And they said, we have the support of a majority of the parties in Northern Ireland. And that is a real problem.
Gerry in Londonderry, I promise I'd let you respond.
Ben, I just want to tell you something. Britain aren't being generous by allowing us to vote for our freedom. No one on the island of Ireland voted for partition. No one on the island of Ireland wanted partition. Not even Charlton wanted the island partitioned. And I'll say, and I just want to say to Doug, about whether or not border roads. The WTO rules state that they have to protect their borders, so England will be forced to put a border up, an English border on Ireland. Well, and I'll tell
them. And Boris Johnson has said, under no circumstances.
Road closures. We will do what we did after 1998. We will go to those roads and we will lock their barriers and throw them in their ditches as we did in 1998, 1999.
And Boris Johnson, Boris Johnson, as Prime Minister, has said that under no circumstances will there be borders closed.
He's delusional. The WTO rules state that they have to protect their border.
Well, the Irish government aren't going to erect any borders. The British government aren't going to erect any borders. So who is going to put them up?
Border.
Well, the Irish government has to protect the single market. If the Irish government can't protect the single market, it will have to leave the European Union. Now, the question here about United Ireland is an interesting one, because the Irish border is now at the very heart of political discourse in Britain and Ireland. But it wasn't Republicans who put it there. And that's the interesting thing. They cannot, they did not put that the border at the centre of discussion after 50 years of trying, and they cannot carry off a border poll. But the reality is, as Ben alluded, there is a middle ground which is now thinking about this. And there is every possibility of a United Ireland coming closer. We also have the demographic changes. For 100 years, the Union was founded on the simple reality of a Protestant majority. And it's going. It's practically gone. The Unionist parties together don't make up 50% of the vote in Northern Ireland since the 2017 Assembly election. So what is the offer to people like me? What is the offer of unionism that keeps us in the union through Brexit, through Scotland leaving, for instance? What's the offer? I don't know what it is. I keep hearing people saying, oh, the Catholics and small-end nationalists, they know what side their bread's buttered on, and they want the National Health Service. What National Health Service is going to be left, you know, if the Tories are running the Britain with Scotland gone?
Let me squeeze some calls in here. Mervyn in Hollywood. Morning, Mervyn.
Morning, Stephen. With regard to Martina Anderson's speech, I find it very sad. But having said that, I would like to ask Doug Beattie a question. Doug, where do you... I'm a unionist. I'm a former member of the security forces. And I want to ask you just one simple question. Where do you see unionism in 2019?
Listen, I mean, 2019, we're halfway through 2019, you know.
All right, where do you see unionism today and heading into 2019?
Well, let's focus this on what particular issue, because we've only got a couple of minutes left. What's a direct question, Mervyn? What are you getting at?
The question is, I strongly believe, yes, we are heading for a United Ireland, quicker than what we thought. Unionism is going nowhere. It has not got one political agenda to stay and to forfeit the union. It's going to happen. Whether we like it or not, it's going to happen. Republicanism and nationalism are very, very
okay.
Well organised.
I'll let you come back in that one second, Doug. Kieran in Limavady. Morning, Kieran.
Good morning, Stephen. I think that Martina Anderson was talking to the masses, and I think what really hurt Republicans and nationalists was last week whenever Arlene Foster stood outside Carson's statue in Stormont and says that Boris Johnson promised her there'd be no border poll. But having said that now, you see the 4 years are talking there, Doug Beattie, yourself, Malachy Doherty and Ben Leary. If it hadn't been for the conflict over the last 40 years, these boys would be all sitting broke. You would have nothing to write about.
Kieran, thank you. And Gregory in Kilkeel. Morning, Gregory.
Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead.
I'd just like to say that just listening to Martina Anderson, I thought that was a bit of a battle cry and playing to the crowds. But now if they're calling for a United Ireland, I just would like to know what their plan would be, you know, to uphold the country. I don't think they can continue down south themselves, keeping jobs going and keeping the economy going. I would just like to know what their focus would be should there be a United Ireland.
Gregory, thank you. Doug Beattie?
Listen, I mean, I have to go back to the question about where should unionism be, and I think I said this earlier on. I mean, we need to be inclusive, and that means all of the political parties who call themselves unionists need to understand that we need to be unionists in the wider sense of the word. And the wider sense of the word is a union of four nations, England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. And it's not just about unionism within Northern Ireland. That's Ulster nationalism. It's the complete opposite. And I think the more we understand that we need to tie into British values, the better things will be, the more attractive the United Kingdom will suddenly become, and the more united we will all be when we're saying the same thing, and that is British values are the way we should be driving this nation apart.
Doug, I remember, and I've just written a book about it, the start of the civil rights campaign when we were saying, give us British rights in Northern Ireland. People now are looking to the Irish Republic as a place which is defending liberal rights that Northern Ireland can't have. You know, so
Malachy,
what do you mean?
You know, you're making my point for me. You're absolutely right. I mean, things have moved, things have changed. And in many ways, some aspects of unionism have stood still. And when people do stand up to try and change this, and I've stood up to try and change this in some ways, we get shouted down. And those who are shouting the loudest, you know, and people just denigrate your point of view. But me walking on Pride on Saturday created such a storm just because I walked at Pride or members and friends and like-minded unionists who walked with me. But we're trying to change, we're trying to move, and other people are trying to hold us back. The sooner we all understand, promote these British values, embrace these British values, make everybody equal, then we have a chance to save our union.
Ben Laurie, final word to you.
Mervyn from Hollywood, if I've got the name and the location correctly, asked a very important question about unionism, what it means. When you actually grind into what it means to be British and you defend it, it becomes quite a difficult thing to do. Of course, you've got Westminster, you've got the shared history, you've got the BBC, you've got this, you've got that. But it actually becomes quite difficult because it's not as easy a concept to grasp as Irish unity. And this is a big challenge for unionists. I mean, I was well into adulthood and I've been following politics since my early teens before I fully appreciated what the UK is and what an incredible and wonderful entity it is.
Ben Laurie,
we're going to have to sell us.